I learned a lot about myself, I think, through that period, because, you know, the fans, as passionate as they are around here, they didn't love the fact that I was playing so many minutes and struggling. And I think that if I could just share that lesson with, like, kids nowadays, it's just like, you got to block out the noise outside the locker room. The most important thing is you staying together with that team, the work you put in, the confidence you get from that work.
Welcome to What's Next with Eric Wood, where we will prepare you to make your what's next in life your best yet. Our next guest is Luke Hancock. Luke was the 2013 Final Four Most Outstanding Player when he was playing for the University of Louisville and is now a college basketball analyst for ESPN and ACC Network, as well as a financial advisor. Luke is a great friend of mine and has incredible stories to share, as well as a whole lot of talk to help you fill out your NCAA tournament brackets. If you enjoy this podcast, please rate, review, and subscribe to help spread the impact we hope to have. Thanks out there to all the new Spotify listeners. Each and every week, those numbers are going up, and I can't thank you enough. Please rate it 5 stars on there if you enjoy this episode. Also, if you share this on social media, tag me or Luke in your stories on Instagram, on Twitter. We'll share it as well, and we could double the impact. Enjoy. Luke, welcome to the show, brother.
Man, thanks for having me. He's been a big fan of these for a long time. I listened to a lot of your pods, so I'm excited to be.
One of the most humbling moments for me as a now podcast guest or podcast host, I'll say, is when I got to see my podcast logo behind you when I'm watching ESPN one day, watching you break down college basketball. So that being said, I know this is an extremely busy time of the year for you. So thank you so much for allowing me to have you on the podcast, allowing the listeners to dig in on your story and then also some betting tips. But we'll start off with you. Even though you're a fan of the show, you know this direction. We're going to start off the same exact way. Tell the audience about where you're from and what all sports you grew up playing.
Well, first, I'll send you a bill for putting that football back there at some point. But just getting to the beginning, I guess. I actually started out as a soccer player. I'm from Roanoke, Virginia. I got a bunch of brothers, and they all were had interest in sports, but they didn't play it at the same level, didn't have, like, the same passion, I guess. They all wanted to go ride dirt bikes and, you know, fishing and shooting, you know, guns. And, you know, they were country boys, I guess. And so I just really gravitated towards sports early on. Played soccer until really my freshman year. I was pretty done with it. I was ready to switch to basketball. Being from Roanoke, Virginia, it's J.J. Redick's hometown. And so seeing him in a high school playoff game, had like 45 points. Place was just electric. He did it with such ease, even though everybody was obviously focused on him. And I immediately thought, like, I'm going to do that. That's what I want to do. And it coincided with a little growth spurt. And I immediately was in love with the game. And I think it helped me to start a little bit later. You know, I think about how many people I know that have their kids training all year round, and they're so uber focused on one thing, one sport. And kids get burnt out that way. And I just wouldn't have been able to function that way. You know, my dad was a CPA. My mom had a monogram business. They weren't big, you know, into sports, but they always supported me. And they kind of just had their rules about, you start something, you got to finish it. You got to give max effort. You know, you're not going to be a jerk to your coaches or anything like that. And I think those lessons and their kind of hands-off approach helped me more than anything. And I remember getting to my freshman year, and we're going through tryouts on JV, and Coach Bush told me, well, you're probably not going to make the basketball team, because I had a soccer tournament and my dad had already paid the money. And his rule was, you know, you're going to finish what you started. And it was my last tournament of the season, and I had to miss 2 days of tryouts. And I really thought I wasn't going to make the basketball team. So I was upset. Luckily it worked out, and Coach kept me on the team, but he really tried to kind of get me to just go the basketball side. My dad, you know, was going to have no part of that. He was going to make me, you know, fulfill the commitment. So ultimately, I think it helped me.
It definitely helped you. And learning those lessons early in life served you in so many different areas. You're the type of guy now that will never quit on your marriage. You won't quit on your job. You're not going to quit once you start something. That serves you in so many different areas in life. And it's going to be interesting with this next generation, because nowadays, and you know it, especially in the basketball community, if you're not solely focused on basketball year round right now, you're not hitting those AAU circuits that all the college coaches are going to see. They don't care what you do nowadays with your high school team. For the most part, they want to see what you do out on the AAU circuit. So it's going to be really interesting to see if these young kids get a lot of overexertion injuries. I know how much my knees hurt just from playing basketball in the summertime with my high school team. And then the wintertime, I can't imagine if I was playing all year round, but that's interesting. And for a guy who I get to witness you finishing what you start nowadays, you actually transferred when you were in college and you were playing at George Mason for legendary coach Jim Larrañaga, but you decided to move on from there. What led to that decision? And this was back when it was very tough to transfer because you had to sit out that full year. And so you still decided to do it. What led to that decision?
Yeah, that's a funny transition to talk about finishing right into transfers. I went to Hargrave Military Academy for a year. So I did prep school. I did 13th grade with Kevin Keats at a Hargrave Military Academy. It's a factory for basketball, man. It's powerhouse Division I guys left and right. We had 13 go Division I on that team, and we're playing a lot of high schools, a lot of college JV teams, the Oak Hill Academies, those type of guys. And, you know, I got recruited by a lot of schools, like most kids that go there, not high majors, some mid majors, a couple high majors, but I just found George Mason was the school for me, and got to take a visit, got to see the other guys I was coming in with. Things just kind of lined up for me. And I like the fact that they got in early. You know, I got better while I was at Hargrave, because that level of competition, physicality, and working every day, it's just another level. It's like, you know, when you go from high school to college and learn how to train differently, you learn how to focus differently. They prioritize different things. So all of that really helped me. And eventually I signed early with George Mason. Went to school there for 2 years. Freshman year was just okay. We didn't have a great season, but we kind of committed ourselves. We're going to come back and we're going to kill it. And so the sophomores and then the juniors in that class, between the two classes, were really good. We had a lot of talent, and we had a lot of guys. So we had the most wins in school history my sophomore year. Went to the NCAA tournament, beat Villanova in the first round. We played Ohio State, the number one overall seed, in the second round. I actually got bad food poisoning. We were playing in Cleveland. My mom still says they poisoned me in Ohio playing against Ohio State, but didn't play in that game. And I remember going home and season's over and start to hear some rumors that Coach Larrañaga is looking at Miami. And he had ties to the ACC. He coached with Ralph Sampson at Virginia. Coach Ralph Sampson at Virginia, excuse me. So I always thought he wanted to get back to the ACC. And after a great year, Miami opens up and he ends up going. And I was really excited for him. You know, I know that relationship with players and coaches and them leaving can kind of be tough sometimes. But I was just really excited. And I was hopeful that I'd have the chance to follow him. But you mentioned it's a different era. And luckily, as the NCAA has gotten more pressure, they've gotten away from some of these ridiculous rules. I think the sit out rule was one of them. You know, how can my coach leave and he doesn't sit out?
Exactly.
And I have to. Yeah. Doesn't make any sense. But I wasn't allowed, another stupid rule, I wasn't allowed to follow him. And I wasn't allowed to go anywhere in conference. And they were going to try to prevent me from going anywhere that was on the schedule next season, which, mind you, I have to sit out. So why would it matter? If I was so anyway, long story short, I actually called Kevin Keats and was talking to him for a little bit. My coach just leaves. What am I going to do? Get on a list of schools and the recruiting process. I really didn't want to go through that again. You know, I appreciated coaches reaching out, but it's constant. You got to feel like you need to respond to everybody and spend time with everyone. And I didn't like wasting people's time, and I didn't, you know, I felt like I had a lot going on. So I kind of closed down my recruitment a little bit. At that point, they had to ask for a release from you. you had to give them a release and then they could talk to you. So really it came down to Virginia, Michigan, and Louisville. And I went on my visit to Louisville. Yum Center just opened up. They had the fourth ranked team in the country. Kevin Keats, who had actually stopped talking to me for a while because he had taken the job at Louisville, didn't want to get any of the tampering or anything going on, finally calls me back and sends my stuff to Coach P, and he gets me on a visit. And everything just kind of fell into place. The opportunity to play a lot, the opportunity to try and win a national championship, a school that I enjoyed, a community that I thought would be good for me. It just kind of all fell in place. And so I committed a little after that, came to Louisville.
I'm glad you threw in the nugget about Kevin Keats cutting off the communication, or else this podcast might have made waves for reasons we don't want it to. Louisville does not need another recruiting violation or anything else brought up. So I appreciate you bringing that up. And so you go from Jim Larranaga, and then you go on to play for Rick Pitino. Rick Pitino has been a guest on the podcast before, someone who I've grown to love over the years. And I'll just ask this, what in your opinion, give me one specific thing or one thing in your mind that separates Rick Pitino as a head coach from so many others to make him a Hall of Famer?
Oof, good question. I think coaches' attention to detail, style, the way he like pushes you. Oh, that's more than one answer, but it's the fact that he leaves no stone unturned when it comes to preparing. Mm-hmm. And he'll try and help you with the mental side, the physical side, the prep on the court. He just is, he's a little, the word I would use is psychotic when it comes to his preparation, with the way he prepares himself in terms of watching film and being in shape and energy, to the way he prepares the last walk-on on the bench. And, you know, not that he was the last on the bench, but, you know, to see a guy like Tim Henderson step up in the tournament, I think is a testament to Rick Pitino and the work he put in with everyone. You know, he's a Hall of Famer at this point, and he's spending hours every day working with small groups, three or four guys, position groups, on all different aspects of their game, trying to make them better every day, plus film room, plus practice, plus weight room. He was maniacal with the preparation, but it's funny to play for two Italian New Yorkers, in Coach L and Coach P. They're just very different. And, the best story I have just in the recruiting aspect, Coach P calls Coach Larranaga and he's just asking questions. And Coach L told this story on our, Nothing But Net show the other day, but, he said, Coach asked him, you know, tell me about him. And so Coach L says, if you need somebody to hit a big shot, Luke's your guy. Need somebody to get a big rebound, Luke's your guy. Make the right pass, Luke's your guy. If you need somebody to break the press, Luke is your guy. Coach is like, well, great, great. What about defense? And Coach L goes, Luke's not your guy. It took some time for me and probably, you know, God has a plan, right? He's looking out for me because I probably needed that redshirt year to adjust to the way coach wanted to play defense. I'm just still very lucky that I had Peyton, Russ, Gorgie, guys like that to make up for all my lapses on the defensive end out there.
Oh, that's an incredible story. I love that. And so Coach L sets you up like that with Coach Pitino, and then Coach Pitino sets you up to the Louisville media. And all we're hearing is that Luke Hancock is the best player at practice. And I'm not saying this to pick on you because you're a buddy of mine, but you started off, I believe, 3-for-29 from 3-point to start your first season with the Cards. And all we had heard was how great this Luke Hancock was going to be and how on this Final Four from team from last year, this is the guy. He's the guy that's going to take us all the way this year, which ends up happening. But I just want to know this about Coach P, because I feel like a lot of really demanding coaches, and you'll see this with Nick Saban with his teams, like when they're not playing well, generally he builds them up. And then when they are playing well, that's when he really puts the hammer down. When you were struggling, was that struggling from behind the arc? I'll say that. Was Coach P building you up during that time, or was he getting on you during TV timeouts?
Yeah, I remember him not caring much about shooting. He's a guy who wants you to affect the game in multiple ways and not really worried about making or missing shots. You know, I had a pretty significant shoulder injury that off season. And so, you know, you get me in a practice or you get me shooting on like the shooting gun or whatever, and I can get, you know, however many shots up. my shoulder's very loose and I'm in rhythm and I'll knock down a lot. But you give me a shot every, you know, 15 minutes, or, you know how it is in games. There's timeouts, you slow down. It's not consistent. And so I felt, especially early on in that season, every shot felt different. There might be a pull one time, I feel all right the next time. It was really tough to feel good and confident when you stepped up to shoot the basketball. But then I'd go in practice and not miss.
Right.
And just I learned a lot about myself, I think, through that period, because, you know, the fans, as passionate as they are around here, they didn't love the fact that I was playing so many minutes and struggling. And I think that if I could just share that lesson with, like, kids nowadays, it's just like you got to block out the noise outside the locker room. The most important thing is you staying together with that team, the work you put in, the confidence you get from that work. And I never really wavered in confidence, because my team and my coach just they knew I would make shots eventually. And so my role changed there for a little bit. But, you know, even my guy, Wayne Blackshear, who was, you know, this isn't the right way to put it, but stealing minutes from me, he was playing over me because we played the same position. He was still a great teammate, still lifting me up. And I tried to do the same for him just because he was such a good guy. And I think that's why, you know, Wayne's going to go down as the winningest player ever at Louisville. That was his focus, winning games. And, you know, just our team is what pushed me through that, that kind of tough time.
Yeah. And on that note, there's talented teams every single season that don't win a national championship. In 2013, you guys were talented, but in your opinion, what's the formula of a team that can get it done in March?
Well, we asked this. So we had Muffin McGraw's got two, and Carlos Boozer, who's got one, Joel Berry's got one, and I have one on the other night, just asking about what's the real secret. And Coach McGraw talked about luck and matchups. Everybody had something to say about confidence. I think it's how you handle adversity. I think it's about when things aren't going right, what do you go to? And for us, it was our defense. And if we're not making shots, we need our defense to create some easy opportunities to get out there and get some layups, get some easy ones. A lot of teams just, hey, if we're hitting shots and we're a front runner, you know, we're going to be all fired up and waving the crowd to get louder and all that stuff. None of that ever affected us, because we just wanted to focus and lock in on our defense. And I think the experience in the Big East tournament, being down 20, playing Syracuse, there's like 12 minutes to go in the game, and we win the game by 20. The run was like 46-7, something ridiculous. And that right there is the last game before we entered the NCAA tournament, made me, and I think my teammates, just never, ever feel like we were out of a game. And it gave us a little chip on our shoulder that, you know, even if you're up a bunch or you're excited about beating us, there's going to be a moment in the game where it's going to change. And it was easy to find those moments in that Syracuse game or Wichita State or Michigan, where we took the momentum and never looked back.
Sean McDermott, the head coach for the Bills, says the exact same thing as far as the NFL goes. And when you have a long season, college basketball is a super long season. The NFL is a long season as well, even though you're only playing 17 regular season games, just the amount of weeks you got to stay at it. He says, whoever can stay together the longest will be the team that comes out of this as the champion or as the making the playoffs. That was our goal in 2017, was just to get to the playoffs and break that long streak. But it was all about who can stay together the longest. Makes a ton of sense when you just say, yes, you have to have the talent and you have to be good on both sides of the ball, because you could have an off night on offense or defense in basketball. That's why 18 out of the last 20 winners of the national championship were top 20 in KenPom rankings in offensive defensive efficiency, because you need both sides to do it, because you can always have an off night when it's a one and done scenario, but it's being able to withstand that adversity. I love that. And you came through in a big way in an adverse moment in the national championship. Louisville's down double digits early. You come down, fire four threes. That's a moment I'll never forget in my life. And so when the NCAA goes back and vacates the national championship, like, I was there. I witnessed that. I flew to Buffalo on a 6 a.m. flight the next day for a workout because Doug Marrone was our new head coach, and I didn't want to miss that first week of workouts with the new head coach. But where does that national championship currently stand? Because I know you went to bat to try and get that back to the university.
Yeah, you know, you can imagine I'm not the biggest fan of the NCAA.
You and Jay Billis.
Yeah, Well, it's just that they haven't adapted with the times. You know, I'll give them credit. I love college basketball. I love college football, college sports in general. But they just didn't adapt. They weren't nimble enough to figure out there are certain things you can't hold on to forever. Name, image, likeness is a great one. The transfer portal should have been changed, you know, 50 years ago. There's just certain things they didn't adapt to. The way they penalized our group, I think, doesn't make sense. It's my opinion, and I'm sure other people have different ones, but I felt like we needed to go do what we could. And as individuals, we called Morgan and Morgan and got their opinion on what they thought and went in. And so this is how I understand it. Basically, we've won the national championship as individuals, but the school, since they did not join our lawsuit, did not win. We had basically, since we, it's a team award, right? So we couldn't ask for as individuals for the team award back. And so all of our records are intact as individuals. Just the win loss as a team is not there. So I guess, you know, it's funny that I'm a national champion and I'm the MOP of the 2013 Final Four. But Louisville basketball is not the national champion. It doesn't make much sense, but it's never going to change my opinion. You know, we went out there and played the game. You know, in terms of recruiting violations, none of those kids ever went to school here. So right. There's some improper benefits, but that seems to be pretty widespread nowadays if you haven't watched the news on ESPN lately.
Yeah, on that, do you think with NIL money now, and I know you're referring to what was happening at that time, but now the way they've just completely opened it up with the NIL, do you think they went too far, or do you think just opening it up was the right step?
Again, I think it's their lack of proactiveness on just adapting to the times. Yes, I think they should have slowly put it in place and had guardrails around it, but they had to go from 0 to 60 because they didn't let go of anything. They had such a stranglehold on this is going to ruin the sport. We're not going to be able to adjust. This is going to be terrible. And so it was, that dam was going to break. And the fact that they just didn't let anything get through at all, they just had to open it wide open. And I think they could have worked with, you know, the commissioners of the Power Five. They could have worked with the heads of these different leagues and figured out a way to say, hey, we need something around this. And the fact that they haven't, you're going to see just variance in who gets name, image, likeness deals, who it affects, who it benefits. You know, again, the model or the system for the NCAA is great. You know, how many opportunities do kids get in non-revenue producing sports that would not be there right. If they're part of this that was held back? But the fact that they thought they could keep the same system exactly as it was, when like the NCAA tournament alone makes $1 billion and you're penalizing kids for making hundreds of dollars, just doesn't make sense.
No, it doesn't. And in this day and age of social media and widespread knowledge, everything's out in the forefront. Every coaching contract, every contract with the NCAA and in CBS or TNT, all these TV networks, all of that was going to just constantly eat at the system until it finally imploded. And this is likely a first step. We could do a whole nother podcast on what the future of the NCAA looks like. We'll save that for another time. But we're kind of on the finance topic. You do financial advising now as well. I want to ask one question on this, and I like to ask financial advisors this. What's one piece of financial advice that seems obvious, but most people violate, that either you work with or you observe?
I think it's the fact that people want to try and hit home runs every time. You know, there's nothing wrong in finance with putting one foot in front of the other. We do, the cornerstone of what we do is financial planning. And so if you can just, especially early on, obviously there's a big advantage for having time, but if you start to look at your whole picture and manage it in a comprehensive way and say, all right, I am going to take risk with this certain amount of my assets. I'm going to have, you know, if you're really building wealth, 401ks or IRAs that help me with some tax advantage, some qualified vehicles. You just, once you kind of piece together your whole picture, there's nothing wrong with getting rich slowly. And I think people feel like, especially now with, you know, Reddit or cryptocurrencies or whatever, wherever you want to go with that, not to say that those aren't money-making tools in the future, but you have to diversify and you have to make sure your risk matches the reward you want. And if you turn it, if you turn your risk too much, it's going to be gambling. And what I do as a financial advisor is try and protect first and grow second for people's wealth. And that's a holistic wealth picture. So that means a lot of different things. But I would just say, you know, you get the water cooler talk of, hey, I bought this penny stock and now it's worth X number of dollars. I made so much money. And that's all you hear, right? You don't hear about the losers or the ones that went down. So I think just managing your risk tolerance is where people make the biggest mistakes.
Yeah, that's excellent advice. And I love how you mentioned time, because so many people will put off investing, or they'll put off maybe trying to earn money in their 20s and 30s, not understanding the financial freedom that one day that will allow. That's excellent advice there. Talk about it. Go ahead.
Right. People think they got to have millions to invest. And I've got a piece in my office about building $1 million retirement portfolio. And it's like a few dollars a day if you start at 20. If you start at 30, it might be $15 a day. And if you wait till you're 55, it's going to be a heck of a lot more than that. But if you can start early, even just contributing to things like a 401k, you know, changes your life, or at least your retirement life, certainly.
Exactly. Exactly. And for those that have blown it, we're going to give them some gambling advice here. We're going to talk some NCAA tournament talk. That's a goofy transition, but let's have some fun with it. All right. So Luke now works with ESPN. He's an excellent analyst, mainly on the ACC network. And so most people out there right now are looking for some help with their brackets. So let's give them a little bit of help. And this, honestly, this is going to be beneficial to me too, because this is the most checked out I've been in my life on college basketball. And I did a Twitter poll basically to kind of see if I was blind to maybe some of the reasons why I was so checked out. And one of the biggest reasons, I have so many Bills fans that follow me and interact with me on social media, as long as the Bills were in it and as dramatic of a loss they had, you know, I was so tied into that Bills season all the way to late January. And then you kind of focus in on the Super Bowl, and with Louisville being so bad like they were and Mac leaving, I was just completely checked out. So I'm back in it. I'm heading to Vegas this weekend. Big weekend of golf and taking in the tournament. So let's start here. Of the four regions, who do you have advancing out of those regions? And this is the time for the listeners. You can press pause and go pull out your brackets and see if they line up.
Well, the first thing is, you know, nobody that really knows what's going on with college basketball ever does well. And that's why we love this tournament, right? There's right. So much madness that goes on. I'll give you a couple points of teams that I think are playing great basketball right now, and some differentiating factors with some of those teams. So if you just want the straight Final Four for me, I've got Virginia Tech in my Final Four, which I know will raise a lot of eyebrows, and they do have a tough road. But there's two teams that are playing the hottest basketball in the country since February 1st. They're both in my Final Four. One is Arizona, and the other is Virginia Tech. And the thing with Virginia Tech is, through their first 20 games, they're 10-10, and then they've only lost two games since then. Virginia Tech doesn't have a ton of weaknesses at this point in terms of, you know, that glaring, hey, they don't have a big guy that can stop somebody, or they can't shoot. They don't have somebody that can dribble penetrate. Those type of things, if you can find that one glaring weakness, college basketball is so much about matchups, right? Why does Notre Dame beat Kentucky? They shouldn't, right? But they've got good coaching, and the matchups just played out in a way where if you're going to basically guard Kellen Grady and you can keep Oscar Tshiekwe from having a 40-40 night, the guy's unbelievable, then they found ways to get shots and win the game. So I think matchups are key. I like Virginia Tech. I know there's probably some people are going to be like, you're insane, but that'll be a big value play. And you got to pick some upsets in this thing. The other one I really like is Arizona. They're complete. I know they had an injury to their guard late, but I've heard he could come back and play. But even without him, love Tubelis. Koloko is just big and mean and physical. Benedict Mathurin is an absolute dog out there, can do it all. He's a guy that can just take over games, and they really play defense. And so I think, again, if you're a high profile team, if you're the one seed, you got to look at, can these guys really lock up on the defensive end? Cause sometimes shots are falling, and for Arizona, there will be times where shots aren't falling. They got to grind out a win, but I think their road is a little lighter. The other one, I don't know how much time you want me to spend on Gonzaga, but the old Howard Schnellenberger line of the only variable is time.
Right.
And that team is long. They're athletic. They got to focus in. I know they lost the late one to St. Mary's, but a lot of times those late season losses will be the catalyst for them to make a run in the NCAA tournament. Kind of wakes you up. We didn't necessarily have that to win ours, but I know it happens every year. A conference tournament loss or something like that kind of propels a team. And the other one, I'm really stuck between Kansas and Wisconsin. I got them in the Elite Eight. I think Wisconsin's a team, again, Johnny Davis got hurt late in the year. Wasn't like a bad, bad injury, but he wasn't fully ready to go against Michigan State in their conference tournament. He's going to be, in my opinion, certainly a lottery pick, potentially a top five or six pick. And I think him having to go back and watch those last two games, he's going to be so frustrated with the way their team played that he's going to be really motivated. He's going to come out there and play great basketball. And he's a guy who's a difference maker. He gets hot, and Wisconsin can make a run all the way to the Final Four. Kansas, it's Bill Self. They're a complete team, big and athletic, a National Player of the Year contender in Agbaji. They defend. They can shoot it. No glaring weaknesses with a lot of those teams, which is why I really like them.
Good deal. All right. So give us like four first round matchups. So often there's a 12 over a five, a 13 over a four. Are there like four first round matchups? I'm not looking for you to guarantee a victory, but ones that you have your eye on.
Well, the first one for me, I think Vermont is playing great basketball, and they're going to go up against Arkansas. Now they've played in the SEC, so they're going to be battle tested. But if Arkansas overlooks Vermont, it's a team that can shoot the basketball just great. They are very well coached, annihilated in their conference tournament, so they're going to be playing with a lot of confidence. They're an upset I'm looking at. You always look at those 12-5, 13-4 matchups. Another one I think that could make some noise is I think Murray State's for real. 30-2 this year. They're not the upset in that first round, but again, they hold Oscar Sheik way down. You know, I'm saying there's a chance. I really like Kentucky's team, and when they're going, they could win a national championship. I mean, they are great. Oscar Sheik might be my favorite player in the country this year, but I saw Murray State play a couple times. They are a very good basketball team. One more. This team is very inconsistent, but I've seen the ACC a ton. If North Carolina plays Baylor in the second round, how unlucky are you as the one seed to have to play the winner of North Carolina and Marquette in the second round? Like, right. You're the ever put together that great season and have to turn around and play those guys. They've got a guy who has more double doubles than any North Carolina player ever. And we think about the greats that have gone through that program. They've got guards that when they're shooting the ball well, will look like first round draft picks. The problem is, at least in the ACC tournament, they miss shots and they let it affect everything else. I'd like to think Hubert Davis goes back and kind of focuses in on that and doesn't let that type of stuff happen, kind of keeps them up. And again, my points on how you win championships, you battle adversity like that. And then I got one more for you. I played for Bob McKillop on this USA team right behind me. He was the head coach. We went to Kazan, Russia, and I think he's a great coach. They got to play Michigan State, but it's going to feel like a home game because it's in Greenville. And so Michigan State, as good as they've been, if a team goes in there and shoots the basketball really well, kind of outscores them, Davidson's known for being a great passing shooting team, having enough toughness to get it done. Michigan State has some guys that can really go. So if somebody has a huge night, Davidson will be able to get it done, but the crowd will be very pro Davidson.
I'm going to lock in on those. I will be out in Vegas with 100 people from the state of Kentucky. If Murray State beats Kentucky, I will be so incredibly happy. And that's coming from a guy who, I'm not necessarily a UK hater. It's just when your team's down, it's tough to root for them. But if you were there when I did the MC at Man Challenge, our morning group, our morning men's group, I presented a Oscar Tshiebwe quote where he goes for the most rebounds in school history in a game and gives all the praise to God. He just handles himself so different. He plays different than most college kids nowadays. So he is easy for me to root for as well. You talked about that North Carolina team. You were on campus at Duke for the night of the Coach K ceremony. So they lose to UNC, and we don't need to recap the entire night, but how awkward was that arena with so many former Duke greats in there, so much media, all the fan base, all these nerds in the crowd are crying. What I say that only because you pick on other ACC schools, but how awkward was that night?
Yeah, I would say it was more heartbreaking. It was sad. You know, there were so many greats in there. You know, I thought I'd been to a UNC Duke game about 2 years ago. We covered one. And we went in the game, and I'm sitting behind Grant Hill and Christian Laettner, you know, Shane Battier's a few down. There's just like greats everywhere. And I can't imagine the pressure coming out of that locker room when you think about coach invited every former player back over 42 years.
Wow.
And 100 of just the legends of Duke basketball in that arena, plus guys who played before that. And you run out of that locker room and every person is saying, hey, you have to get this game done for coach. This is it. The pressure down the stretch was huge. And when they lost that game, you know, Carolina kind of gets out of there quick. I actually did the show with Joel Berry, who won a championship at Carolina. So he was giddy. He was like, when are we leaving? Let's go to Chapel Hill and let's go party. Booze kind of stayed in there for the whole post game. And I will say, the best part was that it was kind of long because Coach K initially going up there and just talking about it being unacceptable. I think he kind of lost what the day was about and was caught up in the game. You know, it's tough for coaches. I think Rick would be the same way, but to turn the light switch off, he's had such a great career, whether you like Duke or not. There are probably a lot of people who's, hey, I'm glad they lost kind of thing, but what he's done for college basketball is pretty incredible. And so I'm glad that it went on for a little bit. And there, some of those administrators and people got to talk to him and about him because he went back up there and talked about family. He talked about the people that had been there and supported him. Butters was the guy's name, the AD, when he first signed. And we saw a little video of him, you know, bringing Coach K in. And they just had to make jokes about not knowing even how to spell his name or who he was when they brought him in there. But they believed in him. And all the relationships he has with all those players and administration and people that supported him, but were also there for all the big moments. It was really special to hear just the thanks that he had for them and his family. You know how it is with sports, man. You make a huge sacrifice to be in the gym, to be traveling, to be at all the games and everything. So I think this last year for Coach K has been really special. You know, I had a soft spot for Duke because of J.J. Redick. But, you know, when you're that good, when you've had that much success, you're going to have plenty of haters. So I'm sure there are people who were happy it didn't go quite as well, but it was a very, very special day.
Yeah, and it's really cool you got to be a part of it. I've gotten to go to 3 games at Cameron Indoor, and it's almost nostalgic when you go in there. And, you know, I've called football games there when they haven't had a basketball game, and just even walking by it, it's a truly special place, but it's truly made special because of Coach K, the sustained success, the J.J. Reddicks, the Shane Battiers, the people that you can see playing in that tiny gym on campus, how loud it is, all the fans. It is a truly special place. And it was a cool year for the ACC to be able to kind of give Coach K that final goodbye for all that he's done for that conference. All right, last one before the recurring questions. Who's your national championship pick?
I got Arizona. I think Gonzaga's got a great opportunity. There are a lot of teams that can really play. I go back to the defensive side. That's how we won a championship. They got to shoot it a little bit better than they have throughout the season. But I think they are so physically imposing. And again, big, physical, and mean. Mean's the third one and maybe the most important one. We had this mentality of, you know, we're not getting pushed around by anybody. That is Arizona. First year coach Tommy Lloyd, 31-3. They have this monster, Christian Coloco, who is dominating college basketball. When he comes out of the game, they've got this guy Balo, who is huge and can go in there and dominate the game as at the five spot. Again, Mathurin's probably a lottery pick. They can really go. I'm a big fan of Arizona.
Are you looking to save time in your busy schedule, but still want to dress like $1 million? Let Jordan Yoakum with Tom James Company save you time. He can work virtually with anyone in the country, and he can provide you clothes that will fit perfectly and give you confidence when you walk into any room. Jordan does everything from dress clothes to casual clothes. Also, wedding season is about to be upon us, and Jordan can provide you and your wedding party with clothing that will turn everyone's head. Contact Jordan at Kentucky Clothier on Instagram and let him know that you heard about him on the podcast, and he will provide you with a free custom dress shirt when you order your first suit or sport coat. As Deion Sanders said, you look good, you feel good, you play good. Let Jordan take care of that for you. Again, that's Kentucky Clothier on Instagram.
Good deal. Well, I'll be paying attention a lot closer now through the end of college basketball season than I have been prior. And hopefully next year we're doing this show again and we're talking about Louisville being in a position, maybe up here at the top of one of them. But let's get through a few of these recurring questions. Do you have a favorite book?
I think the book Shoe Dogs, Phil Knight's book.
Yep.
You know, getting into business and having kind of a creative mind and an unsure about what I wanted to do. I read his book and I just really appreciated all the struggles early on and how he talked about just not really knowing what was next and having to take these big risks and, just the things that seem crazy now when you think about what Nike is, to really see the like foundation of how all that got built. Because people see success, it's the same thing in sports. They don't ever see the grind. And so I loved him kind of going into the ins and outs of what it took, the sacrifice, all those things to actually reach some level of success and even finding success at times and still getting knocked back or still having to battle things. I thought his book was really interesting. So
I thought it was excellent, and I couldn't believe the amount of detail that he remembered. And it's not like a dramatized detail, because all of that would be called out because so many people are familiar with the story. So the amount of detail that he was able to recall, and whenever Warren Buffett puts out his favorite book of the previous year, and it's a more of a story, even though it's a story about a businessman, when it's a story like that, then you know it's going to be a good one. What role does your faith play in your life?
Huge. Obviously you and I have had a relationship where faith plays a part. We see each other a lot, going to Man Challenge and members of the same church. And I think I've always been, you know, a faith-based person and tried to be a part of church and tried to do the right things. But I think especially over the last few years, having a family and thinking about what you really want in life and what's important, I've just been drawn closer and closer, and you know, nobody is as close as they want to be. But I think having that foundation and that reminder a few times a week, being with our group, but the type of people that I want to be around, the type of life I want to lead, it all has something to do with being closer with Christ. And so it's the type of relationship I want to have. It's the type of father I want to be. You know, I try and think about all my life's decisions and relate it back to what makes the most sense in my walk with Christ.
Yeah, and if you're testing those in a biblical way, you're going to be on the right path. And I'm proud of you in your walk and what I've got to witness. What was your first car?
My brother and I shared a Jeep for a long time, but when
Jeep,
I went
Jeep Cherokee, Jeep Wrangler,
it was a Jeep Cherokee and it was my mom's. I got hand-me-downs for sure. But I have four older brothers. So all the cars I got early on were hand-me-downs. But when I went to Louisville, I was driving this old black Explorer we used to call the Black Stallion. And there was a hailstorm that came through Louisville, and it dented every panel in that car. And so when we went to the insurance people, the car was basically worth nothing. I think they said, we'll give you $3,800 and you can keep the car, or we'll give you $4,100 and we'll take the car. I was like, well, that doesn't make sense. So we just took the check, and my brother got one, and I got to keep one. Luckily he took the one with all the dents in it, but yeah, the old Black Stallion.
That's funny. That's a good story. What's your favorite restaurant?
I'm a Jeff Ruby's guy. Since getting to Louisville, it's been my favorite spot. You can go there and get seafood. You can go there and get great steaks. I love the sushi there, and I love the atmosphere. You know, there's usually live music. You can go sit in the bar before a game and have a drink and eat a great meal. Jeff Ruby's, man, for sure.
Yeah, me too. And he's been a guest on the podcast, and we bragged on him, and I love being able to text him after guests come on the show and talk about the restaurant and honor him in that way. All right, last one for me. This is what's next with Eric Wood. What's next for Luke Hancock? And I'll phrase it as, I know you got a little one at home, but college basketball season's ending. What do these next few months look like on your horizon?
Well, I'm a little unsure. Hopefully a little bit of golf, but it'll definitely be more family time coming up because it has been a little crazy. But I'll tell you this. You know, I hope Bob Valvano is doing great. He got sick before the semis and the championship in Brooklyn for the ACC tournament. And so about 30 minutes before the semis, Aaron Katzman, who I know you know, comes up to me and says, hey, you want to do ESPN radio? You want to do the national broadcast for the game? And I was like, well, I've never done that before. And he was like, I know. You know, you want to do it? And I was like, I haven't prepped or anything. I basically asked him, do you think this is a good idea? And he was like, well, I wouldn't ask you if I didn't think you'd do a good job. And so, you know, with very little prep, go out there and call my first game and did the two semis. And they asked me to come back and do the ACC championship. So I had a great time. Sean Kelly did it with me, and he was fantastic. He was a man. So I don't know if I'll have more of that in the future. But short term, like you mentioned, I'm a financial advisor. It's going to be great to pour into clients with everything going on. And I love it here. I love our team. So it'll be a golf, family, and a little finance.
Well, I'll be a part of maybe some family time and definitely some golf time. We got some hanging to do in our future. We've both been working too hard through football and basketball season, but I can't thank you enough for your time. I know you got a million things going, but to bless me and the listeners with this time on the podcast means a lot to me. And then you're someone who I got to know while you're at Louisville, got to grow with you as we've gotten older. And man, I'm just proud of you and can't thank you enough for all the words you shared on the podcast, brother.
Well, same to you, brother. It's been awesome to watch your just dedication to what's next in your life. You know, I think I take a lot away from the fact that, you know, you're a guy who's been successful and yet you're still so driven and focused and passionate on life and what you do 100%. You really pour your whole self into. And it's a great example, man. I'm happy to be on here. I appreciate it.
I appreciate it, brother.